This is NBC Nightly News, Thursday, October 30th, with John Chancellor reporting from the NBC News Center in New York and David Brinkley's Journal from Washington.
Good evening. Prince Juan Carlos de Borbon y Borbon is the new chief of state in Spain. He was given the power conditionally tonight as the medical condition of Generalissimo Francisco Franco grew worse. Juan Carlos may not be crowned king of Spain until Franco dies, but as of tonight, the 37-year-old prince is head of the Spanish state. Here's more on the transfer of power from our correspondent in Madrid, John Dancy.
Juan Carlos took over as functional head of state tonight under a law which provides that he takes over when Franco is incapacitated. It was the same law that came into play last year when General Franco suffered from an attack of phlebitis. The prince's first act will be to preside over a cabinet meeting tomorrow. The reports here have been that the prince had adamantly refused to take power temporarily, feeling that last year when he took power temporarily and then had to give it back, that he was humiliated. But under Article 11 of the Constitution, as designated successor, he has no choice but to take office if Franco is incapacitated. Though it is technically temporary, the feeling here is that it will become permanent, that the Franco era, in fact, ended tonight.
I put two questions about the change in the reign in Spain to John Dancy. The first was, how much power will Juan Carlos really have? As much as General Franco was able to wield?
Juan Carlos will not have the same powers that Franco had. Franco had absolute power under a law which was passed in the late 30s and which dies when he passes from the scene. Juan Carlos will, in fact, have a 17-man council to which he must report and which must approve his actions. Part of the real power will be shared by Carlos Arias Navarro, the prime minister of the country, who will have powers far beyond those of the prince. I think the real thing to remember is that power in this country, for the first time in more than a generation, will be divided.
I also asked Dancy about the prospects of political stability in Spain in the short term and in the long term.
The prospects are that there will not be any great upheaval immediately. The political parties in this country, which are organized and ready, even though they are technically illegal and outlawed, are willing to wait for a few months and see what Juan Carlos does. They're hopeful, of course, that he is going to open up the political process, somehow bring them in, perhaps even allow free elections. But if that does not take place, then there is a very real likelihood that there will be acts of terrorism and that there could even be a spiral of terrorism that could very much endanger the stability of the government.
Doctors today punctured Franco's stomach to relieve a buildup of fluid, and for the first time in several days, the medical bulletin did not say that the Generalissimo was conscious. In Beirut, Lebanon today, at least 30 more people were killed. The Muslim street fighters were reported gaining the upper hand against their Christian opponents. Some foreigners, including Americans, were rescued from downtown hotels, but another American was kidnapped, the third in 8 days. Here's more from our man in Beirut, John Palmer.
This is what is known as the Kantari section of Beirut, just 2 blocks from the city's once fashionable Hamra shopping district. For the past 5 days, Kantari has been the scene of fierce fighting between members of the right-wing Christian Falangist Party and leftist Muslim groups. Falangist militiamen have made repeated attacks against this predominantly Muslim community using rocket, mortar, machine gun, and small arms fire. Similar battles to gain control of various sections of the Lebanese capital continue to be fought in other areas, including the major hotel district near the sea. In past outbreaks of fighting in Lebanon, the two sides have been content to fire at each other from fixed positions. Now, there is an attempt to capture territory. Each side wants to get control of as much of the city as it can, as quickly as it can, to prepare for the possible partitioning of Lebanon into Muslim and Christian enclaves. The Muslim left is demanding a greater voice in the Lebanese government, which has been dominated by the Christian minority. The Christians say they're willing to make a few changes, but not under pressure during the fighting. The political situation at a stalemate. Lebanon's civil war continues, with each side determined to fight for victory in a country which in the past has only been able to thrive by a delicate balance of power between Christians and Muslims. John Palmer, NBC News, Beirut.
President Ford asked the Congress today for more than $4.5 billion in foreign economic and military aid. The request included over $2 billion for Israel, $750 million for Egypt, $250 million for Jordan, and $90 million for Syria. Also on the program tonight, we'll have the latest chapter in the story of New York City's fiscal crisis. In politics, we'll be hearing from President Ford and from a new Republican challenger, Senator Charles Mathias of Maryland. And we'll have a report from Roy Neal on a very common American malady, stress, and what can be done about it. Those stories and others in a minute.
Isn't it time you compared whole wheat total with the leading natural cereals? You'll see there's a big difference. 1 ounce of fortified total gives you 100% of the recommended daily allowance of all these important vitamins and iron. 1 ounce of the leading natural cereals gives you no more than 6%. Check the vitamins and iron listed on the side panels. You'll see 100% versus 6%. That's the total difference.
The perfect roast. The result of another Litton microwave oven first. New Veritemp control. It lets me set the degree of doneness I want. The oven does the rest automatically. And it also comes with Vericook oven control that lets me cook, reheat, roast, simmer, warm, defrost. Litton takes the guesswork out of microwave cooking. Litton is changing the way America cooks.
In Washington, the Senate Banking Committee voted 8-5 Monday to report out a bill providing up to $4 billion in government loan guarantees for New York City, even though President Ford has said he'll veto any such bill. Earlier, the committee heard about another New York City plan to keep itself from defaulting on its debts. Under that proposal, another $4 billion in city pension funds would be tapped through some very complicated procedures. There's some doubt this can be done, and the very existence of the plan provided ammunition for those senators who don't want to help New York City. Irving R. Levine reports.
Republican Senator Packwood accused New York officials of deceiving Congress by failing to disclose the pension fund negotiations.
Golden and Beam and Kerry have all been here, and they have never told us about these negotiations. They've never said there is a possibility this might work. They have led this committee and this Congress astray by duplicity. And we haven't got an obligation to bail those liars out when they'll sit here and not tell us the truth.
Other Republicans argue there was no sense in voting for a federal loan guarantee because of President Ford's threatened veto.
The fact remains is there ain't gonna be no loan guarantee legislation.
All right, let's assume
all the gloom and doom about the horrors of default all day. But the fact of the matter is New York City is going into default, and there's nothing we can do to change that.
But Senator Stevenson argued that it will be cheaper for the government to prevent default than to contribute to the city's payroll after default, as President Ford had suggested.
The real significance of the president's statement yesterday was concealed by its punitive tone. But the real significance of those remarks yesterday was that he proposed the largest bailout of all, larger than any bailout contemplated by any member of the Congress.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Finally, the committee voted to send the Senate a bill providing $4 billion in guaranteed loans to prevent default, or $500 million for payrolls if default occurs.
No.
Committee Democrats hope to convince others that it will cost less to prevent default than to help the city afterwards. Also, they say President Ford could change his mind, as he has in the past, and not veto the bill. So, say the Democrats, hopefully, their vote was not just a futile gesture. Irving R. Levine, NBC News, Washington.
The governor of New York State, Hugh Carey, who's a Democrat and a liberal but not a revolutionary, called on New Yorkers today to take to the streets to sound off support for the city. Carey said he was thinking of a mass rally, possibly in Times Square, but he didn't set a date.
Last year,
Joel Sartorius went to Venice, as hundreds of thousands of people do each year. But Joel wasn't on a holiday. He went to study the art of Venice. Joel was one of 59 young men and women, graduate students on ITT International Fellowships. Like Joel, half of them were Americans studying abroad. The others, foreign students in America. What Joel learned on his ITT fellowship will be a big help someday in the career he's chosen, teaching. The people he met learned something about him, too, and about us Americans. And that really is what these ITT fellowships are all about. Not only teaching people for a career, but teaching people about people.
President Ford carried on his campaign today against what he calls a federal bailout for New York City. He did so 3,000 miles from his target out in San Francisco. Tom Brokaw is traveling with the president, and here is his report.
There was extraordinary security in downtown San Francisco when President Ford arrived at the hotel where 5 weeks ago someone took a shot at him. The presidential limousine went directly into a well-protected hotel garage. Mr. Ford stayed in seclusion until it was time to appear at a Republican fundraising reception and luncheon. He brought up the New York City situation by comparing it to the San Francisco earthquake and fire.
Next year marks the 70th anniversary of the San Francisco fire. San Francisco passed the ultimate test of the recuperative power of an American city. Local courage and local determination prevailed. The reconstruction of San Francisco was not a federal bailout. It was a local undertaking.
President Ford remains convinced that most of the country supports his position on New York. In a television interview earlier today, the president was asked about people who hold New York bonds. He said they would be paid eventually, but pointed out that they took a gamble on a tax-free investment. And the president dismissed speculation that his plan would ruin the bond market for other cities. Mr. Ford said, quote, "I don't think we should be scared." There were no major security problems, although Secret Service agents did pick up a man in the park across from the hotel. He was carrying a replica of a gun, and he has not been charged with anything. Mr. Ford left San Francisco as he arrived under heavy guard and in a hurry. He went on to Milwaukee for another Republican fundraiser. Tom Brokaw, NBC News, San Francisco.
And at a nearby hotel, Ronald Reagan, the president's conservative Republican rival, agreed with Mr. Ford that the government shouldn't be called on to bail out New York. Reagan said he was delighted the Democrats are holding their presidential convention in New York. And in Washington, the possibility emerged today of a Republican challenger, both to Mr. Ford and Mr. Reagan. He is Senator Charles Mathias, Jr. of Maryland. Tom Pettit has the story.
Senator Mathias, a Republican liberal, today began a campaign against the conservatism of both Ronald Reagan and President Ford.
It's not merely a matter of President Ford's fascination with what I consider to be a very real threat on his right, which is limiting debate among Republicans. I think it's time to recognize the attrition that has debilitated the Republican Party.
Charles Mathias, 53, is in his second Senate term. He was an early enemy of Richard Nixon. Now he is accusing Mr. Ford of hurting progressive Republicanism with right-wing plans.
A New York City plan, which becomes the National Republican plan, which is really Senator Buckley's plan, and a food stamp plan, which is a National Republican plan, which is really Governor Reagan's plan, without any discussion broadly across the party, I think we're in trouble. I think can have a good Republican Party again if there is broad participation, which is not only tolerated and condoned, but welcomed at every level of the party. If not, as I said earlier, I think we'll become the Whigs of 1976.
The Whig Party went out of business in 1854. But what Mathias was really talking about today was the possibility of his running for president. either as a progressive Republican or on a third-party ticket. Tom Pettit, NBC News, Washington.
The nomination of Joseph Coors, brewing company executive, to be a member of the board of directors of the Public Broadcasting Corporation was tabled. That means killed today by the Senate Commerce Committee. Senator John Pastore said one reason was Coors' refusal to resign from the board of his own television company called Television News Incorporated. And incidentally, that company, which was not a financial success, goes out of business tomorrow.
If you are among those arthritis sufferers who can't take aspirin because it may irritate your stomach, New Dones Arthritis Formula is for you. Every Dones Arthritis Formula tablet has an enteric coating to help protect against stomach irritation, plus the strength of two regular aspirin tablets for effective temporary relief from occasional arthritis minor pain. New Dones Arthritis Formula, for hours of relief with less stomach irritation.
Good news from Oster.
The Oster Kitchen Center is an Osterizer blender, multi-speed mixer, powerful food grinder, with optional accessories to handle lots of jobs like these: mixing dough for making bread, or squeezing orange juice instead, making salads crisp and nice, or cooling things by crushing ice, opens cans both large and small in any kind of shape at all. See the Oster Kitchen Center at fine stores everywhere.
Two former administration officials today told the House Intelligence Committee about the famous 40 Committee, which is described, sometimes in hushed tones, as the group that approves secret, covert American intelligence operations. They said, however, the five-man committee, headed by Secretary of State Kissinger, didn't hold a single meeting between April 1972 and December of 1974. They said the members of the 40 Committee approved those secret projects by consulting over the telephone or in writing. In Cleveland this morning, authorities ended their 20-hour siege of a bank when a man who tried to rob the bank released all of his hostages and surrendered. The man has a long criminal record and a bad heart. He gave up when he was promised medical treatment. Scott Osborne reports.
The siege began yesterday when police surprised gunman Edward Watkins in a holdup attempt at a Westside Cleveland bank branch. Watkins immediately took 9 hostages. 200 police and FBI agents surrounded the bank. Watkins allowed 3 hostages to leave yesterday. Then this morning, he released 2 more hostages. They were followed by the last 4 hostages who walked away in good condition. Moments later, Watkins surrendered. Watkins is 56 years old and has convictions for bank robbery and parole violations dating back to 1936. Throughout the siege, he told police he had enough dynamite to blow the bank apart. Later, authorities discovered he had nothing more than a shoebox with a transistor radio inside. A Cleveland detective said Watkins, who has a bad heart, was persuaded to give up with promises of medical attention.
He made a request to go to Medical General Hospital, and we made arrangements, assured him that the arrangements had been made, and he surrendered.
At the end of the 20-hour ordeal, no one was hurt. Watkins was taken to a hospital and now faces a multitude of charges. Scott Osborne, NBC News, Cleveland.
The government reported today that 1 week ago at its Nevada nuclear test site, a small unarmed nuclear warhead accidentally fell 40 feet as it was being lowered into a hole in the ground. 11 workers suffered minor injuries, but there was no radiation leak and no explosion. The federal government today revised its estimates of casualties should a worst possible nuclear power plant disaster take place. The new report says the chances of a nearby resident being killed should that happen are 1 in 5 billion, which is 9% less than the previous estimate. But the likelihood of a person suffering cancer or genetic damage is 6 times greater than estimated earlier. David Brinkley's Journal tonight deals with a government report that says more than half of the adults in this country are unable or barely able to cope with life. David?
A few years ago, an idea called the Peter Principle tried to explain why things so often fail to work. The principle is that in public and private institutions, a person who does his work well gets promoted and keeps getting promoted until finally he is in a job he does not do very well and so is promoted no more, and that's where he stays, in a job he does poorly. Well, much in American society does not work well, and that may be one reason. But another, and more persuasive, is in a report this week from the U.S. Office of Education, based on a government-supported study of thousands of adults. It finds that about 20% of the American people are simply incompetent. Not illiterate, necessarily, but lacking the ordinary skills to cope with work, family responsibilities, and simple daily problems. Beyond that, a third of us are barely able to get by, struggling all the way, and fewer than half of the adults in America have any abilities of any real consequence. Fewer than half. The U.S. Commissioner of Education, making this public, said he found it shocking and said it called for a major rethinking. Of course, it is easy to blame the schools for turning out incompetence, but it is a lot to ask that the schools cure whatever causes this, and so nobody has offered an answer. In any case, it is not a particularly flattering picture. 20% of us woefully incompetent, a third barely able to get by, and fewer than half with any real skills at all. John?
The federal government disclosed today that 207 doctors around the country earned $100,000 or more each treating Medicaid patients last year. The doctor who earned the most was a New York State physician who collected $451,000 from Medicaid in 1974. The government did say that today's disclosure does not imply fraud or abuse on the part of the doctors. This is a picture taken today of a famous anthropologist who you see there in whom you see there in shadow and the oldest human bone ever discovered. She is Mary Leakey, the widow of Louis Leakey, both pioneers in the search for the origins of humankind. The bone is a jawbone found in Tanzania in East Africa. It is a fossilized jawbone with teeth from a creature called Genus Homo, true man. Radioactive materials in that jawbone show it to be 3.5 million years old, which means that's your grandfather, folks, multiplied by almost 10 million generations.
I'd like you to take a close look at this bread. The color is light brown, and the texture, a unique blend of whole grain wheat and whole grain rye. There's bran, defatted flax seed, and other nutritious ingredients, including pure golden honey. This isn't ordinary bread. It's Roman meal, the good-tasting light brown bread. Roman meal, natural whole grain goodness. The Roman Meal Company thought you'd like to know.
Flight 12 delayed by blizzard.
4 more hours. I'll never make it.
Here, take hold. I've got cough drops.
Hold is better than needing cough drops. Read the label.
Has dextromethorphan,
real cough medicine. 2 hold work up to 4 hours.
Flight 12, now boarding.
Hey, I've hardly coughed in 4 hours.
Why get grounded over a cough?
Yeah.
New hold 4-hour cough suppressant, better than cough drops.
What makes America work? It can be just trying to get the most out of our natural resources.
At U.S. Steel, we're turning gas from our coke ovens into viable fertilizer. This is a model of our plant, where the gas is treated and combined with nitrogen from the air. The result is anhydrous ammonia, a fertilizer that improves the yield of many crops.
Putting byproducts to good use, that makes America work. At United States Steel, we're involved.
Two of the most common bits of advice people offer other people are slow down and calm down. Roy Neal tells us tonight about a Texas hospital that is trying to teach people to take both pieces of advice.
Life in the 20th century isn't easy. Traffic, crowds, an accelerated way of life, technology have combined to increase tension in almost all of us. And now, stress is recognized as a major cause of many diseases. Management jobs in particular are in the highest risk category. Businessmen have higher pulse rates and blood pressure. They smoke more. Psychiatrists say that responsibility seems to breed stress, or perhaps distress. Recently, the Drilco Corporation in Houston, Texas, sent 60 of its executives to Houston International Hospital to take part in an experimental program. They use biofeedback devices to help people learn how to control tensions. Biofeedback uses machines to monitor body functions. This one, for example, reads a patient's muscular tension as a series of audible clicks. The more clicks, the greater the tension. A recording tells the patient what to do. The clicks show him how well he succeeds.
Now, try to tense every muscle in your body. And now let it all go. Let the whole body relax. You should now feel a definite wave of calm.
Tension is a major cause of migraine headaches. This machine reads skin temperature. By relaxing, a patient can raise temperature in the hands and feet as much as 25 degrees. The doctors here say this causes blood to flow to the extremities, relieving the dilated blood vessels in the head that cause tension headaches. The patient hears a voice and a tone. When the tone goes down, the temperature in her hand is going up.
And then focus your thinking completely on your breathing.
The patients say the devices really help. The doctors say the program is successful.
What we're doing here is teaching the average individual who is under stress, obviously, and must feel this at all times, to cope with this stress by learning little techniques, the way he feels inside, that tips him off as to whether he's relaxed or not, so that his blood pressure comes down, his ulcer stops secreting acid, hopefully, his migraine headache goes away, his back pain of undetermined origin is relieved because the tension is relieved. And that's what this program does, the so-called biofeedback.
Technology is blamed for much of the stress of life in the 20th century. But now, technology has come up with some devices to help people cope with the problems it has created. Roy Neal, NBC News.
And a calm good night to you all for NBC News.